Welcome, and thanks for listening to Intrinsic Investigations. My name is Mr. Olivo, and I created this podcast because I've been fortunate enough over the last decade to see unique and thought-provoking projects happen in my classroom, and we wanted a place to showcase them. The true heart of this podcast lies not in the content discovered, but in exploring the personal stories of these young researchers as they journey through uncharted and unfamiliar intellectual terrain. By sharing their stories, we hope to normalize the challenges and frustrations that come with independent research, and also share those moments where students transcend the normal grind of the school day to discover concepts that range from the global to deeply personal. We will begin with a brief introduction to the student of focus, why they pick their topic, and discuss their growth over the course of the last year. It should be mentioned that the opinions expressed in this podcast in no way reflect the opinions of our school district, Bergen County Technical Schools and Special Services, or our school itself, Bergen County Technical High School Teterboro, or the College Board. The work detailed in this podcast was most likely completed in AP Capstone, but this podcast is in no way affiliated with the College Board. For the second episode of season two, we have two guests who are going to introduce themselves in a moment. We have Lily and we have Haley. They're going to talk to us about their projects, which do share some overlap. So first, Lily, if you want to introduce yourself and tell the audience a little something about yourself before we get into your project.
Okay, like myself or my research?
You.
Okay.
You're the vehicle for the research. Okay.
So my name's Lily Riveros, and I'm a junior in law.
And Haley?
Hi, I'm Haley Shen. I'm a junior at BT in the digital media major, and I'm interested in art, design, and also English and Asian representation, which relates to my research.
Lily, do you have any other interest outside of your major? Or are you just all about law?
No, guys, I have a personality. Okay.
You're trying to say people involved in law don't have personalities?
No.
Oh, okay.
Never. I do want to pursue law. I want to pursue law in the future, but I do like watching TV, which pertains to my research.
Oh my goodness. So already we have this broken down. All right. You like watching TV. Lily, Haley, you like exploring Asian American representation. Let's just dive right in. How is television related to your work, Lily? And how is AAPI representation related to your work, Haley? Lily, start us off.
Okay, so I guess I'm a teenager, so that's like an adolescent.
You guess you are?
I guess I'm a teenager. Oh, okay. And I watch TV, so that kind of translated into what I wanted to do. So I wanted to look into specifically like adolescent television and how it kind of impacts like our cognition and like our social skills. And in my research, I started wanting to do like art, like my age, like I'm 16, but I found that there was a bigger research gap within younger age groups, like toddlers. And so that kind of led me to my content analysis, which was on specifically like adolescent, like toddler, 3 to 5 year old TV shows, which was, in my case, I did a content analysis on Bluey, Peppa Pig, and Daniel Tiger Neighborhood reviews.
Similarly to Lily's work, I also focus on the more like adolescent or children age group. And in particular, I focus on the pre-K to third grade age range. Personally, I also do teach children outside of school, as in I teach math to mathnasium students. And through that, I'm able to kind of experience how students learn, but not necessarily in the terms of books themselves, which I was able to explore a lot in my research. For Asian American and Pacific Islander representation, which I'll be referring to as AAPI, I feel like I personally, as an Asian American person and also a reader of Asian American literature, I just found the topic really fascinating. And when looking into scholarly articles, I was able to see how impactful this representation can be for children.
All right, Lily and Haley, you both engaged in scholarly research this year, and you kind of hinted at where that work will go, and we'll get into how you explored all of this. But What was your goal with your work, and how did you try to explore it?
So specifically, like, even before I knew I wanted to do a content analysis, I wanted to look into, like, the social impacts of television shows, because I kind of see that replacing a lot of, like, everyday, like, social interactions, like, even going outside. So that led me into my preliminary research, kind of, like, looking into that, and I found that the best way to do that was kind of to see how people perceived that. And when I found that the biggest impact was on kids, I realized that they wouldn't really know that it was impacting them, and that a different perspective kind of, like, removed would be better.
And I feel like what you just said right there about how they wouldn't even know how it's impacting them relates to Haley's work, and probably why the two of you are doing this podcast together. This idea that your work is focused on children who are probably not cognizant at all of how the media they consume is impacting them. Mm-hmm. So Haley, how is your work connected to that idea?
So similarly to Lily, with she analyzed parent and educator reviews, I believe, or primarily parents. So she focused on looking at IMDb, I believe.
IMDb, X, and Google.
Yes, IMDb, X, and Google. I just focused on Goodreads, and my reviews did not focus on a particular, like, parents versus educators. I did focus on public perceptions, and I think something that Lily can relate to as well is that, like, we are looking at these reviews from, they're primarily written by, like, parents, and our study is focused on more of, like, their perspective rather than the child's perspectives themselves. So for future directions, I would be, like, really interested in seeing how studies could approach like blending the two and figuring out relationships with it.
The research in both of your cases was focused on parental reviews or parent-guardian reviews, correct? Or we're making an assumption, I guess, with yours, Haley.
So for mine, I focused on public perceptions, so it would include parents, educators, etc. But I did not specify parent or educator reviews, although I did acknowledge them.
Gotcha. But reviews are ultimately the data that's being analyzed. Lily, how did you analyze the reviews that you came across on IMDb, X, and
Twitter? Oh, no, not X, sorry. X is Twitter. Google.
And Google.
Yeah.
So how did you gather and analyze these reviews, and what were you looking for?
So I think gathering them was really important to, like, my research intent. So I wanted to see how parents felt their relationship with their child was impacted. And so in my first, like, gathering of, like, reviews, I did, like, a random generation random number generator, and then I chose the top reviews that came up. But I think a limitation I found was that I had no guarantee that this was a parent review. So I added, like, a second, like, round of, like, inclusion, that there was a mention of, like, a lot of parents would say, like, oh, as a parent, as a guardian, as a child. So I kind of looked for those words in order to be included. And then I kind of coded from there.
You would use the context clues to figure out this had to be a parent talking about this.
Yeah.
And what were the television shows of interest for you that you were trying to explore?
Like my selection of the shows?
Yes, yeah.
So I kind of looked at parenting blogs, like several pop sources, to see which were the most popular. But then also another limitation I found was that there's only a limited number of reviews across platforms, and I wanted an even representation. So I had to look at not only the most popular shows from parents and kids, but whatever had the most, like, reviews that I could use for my data set.
And those shows would be?
Bluey, Peppa Pig, and Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood.
If the parents at home are familiar with those three juggernauts of child entertainment.
Yeah.
They're big deals.
Yeah.
I hear Bluey's a fantastic show. I've never watched it, though.
It's pretty good, yeah. And then everyone sings, you know, the Daniel Tiger Neighborhood song. So.
Yeah. It's Daniel Tiger's. Oh, copyright strike. All right, Haley. Yes. I got thrown off by my singing of Daniel Tiger. So, Haley, how did you pick the books that were ultimately going to serve as... And again, the books weren't the content you analyzed. You analyzed the reviews of the books. But how did you select those books?
So first, I want to add on to what Lily said about how when she found the reviews, she looked at parent keywords, like, oh, like as a parent or... Sure. For that instance, I couldn't really find that as much. So I remember Lily suggested it and I did try looking into that, but then I realized like that wasn't really an option to go forward. Pertaining to your question about how I found my book selection, I first used this very widely used source called CCBC, or Cooperative Children's Book Center. And the CCBC, I saw in many previous research studies where they were analyzing the books themselves, and when they had to select the books for the conventional, the content analysis of the books, they decided to use CCBC. Aside from CCBC, I also looked at other studies, and I tried to gain inspiration from prior studies on how they selected their books to figure out how I would select my own books. And I ended up using a variety of sources to be able to limit more bias. So I would include like popular book lists from like Amazon Books or like Barnes and Nobles and libraries to be able to try to have a more comprehensive understanding, because CCBC does have a focus on the books that they are sent to, and it might not be able to fully capture other books as well.
In 30 seconds or less, I'm going to challenge both of you a little bit. Can you explain what a content analysis is to someone who doesn't know what a content analysis is? Because it is a method that both of you employed, and most high school students have no idea of really what it is, so they may have misconceptions about it. So in 30 seconds, I don't know who feels confident enough to jump in on this one. What is a content analysis?
Okay. I can start and then you can build off.
Yes.
Sounds like a plan.
Okay. So I think it's when you're taking media, either written or visual, it could be from a TV show, a book. I used reviews, you used reviews, and you're kind of researching the, like, you're coding the different elements of it. Either it's like the visual, like the rhetorical elements of it, to kind of create new findings.
I would like to add that it's not like coding as in like computer coding, although it can be, but it's more towards capturing the patterns and creating categorizations and putting your media in like certain categorizations to figure out what the patterns are.
Cool. All right. I'll take that. That was a good explanation. I don't know why I made that arbitrary number of 30 seconds, but that was a good explanation. Haley, in the 30 seconds, because this is going to take a little bit longer. In your content analysis, what do you think the most significant thing you found was in your work?
Okay, so there is a... I have significance and I also have like prevalence, because...
Yeah, in these reviews. Yeah, the most prevalent thing, the most significant thing, however you want to take this.
Yeah, in terms of prevalence, like I have the broad categorization of praise versus critique, which is either praise towards Asian American and Pacific Islander representation in the books, or critique towards it, which is found within the reviews. And it is somewhat surprising that I have found a wide disparity between the praise and criticism, because there's so much praise as opposed to criticism, while scholarly studies have primarily found that there are like representations or bits of critique. It also is could be pertaining to the books that I chose, and also because many studies have found representation improving over the years, which is something that is important to look into. And also, I think it would be interesting to look into how these reviews would compare to someone deeply analyzing the books themselves, and seeing if there's any differences between how... whether the reviewers are really deeply criticizing or whether they're just glancing over the microaggressions that could be displayed.
Then a content analysis of the books themselves that you read the reviews for could help understand that.
Yes, exactly.
Had you read any of the books that you had read the reviews of?
Oh yeah, I did for my method, I did read them beforehand to gain context. So, but then it didn't really impact my, I would say, it didn't have too much of an impact because I was focusing on what the reviewers are saying rather than trying to look at the book itself.
But you had that context of the contents of the book.
Yes.
Did the reviews that you read for any particular book surprise you in any way, or what, like where there was maybe a critique that you just hadn't seen while reading the book that you saw expressed by a reviewer or no?
I saw a critique that I think this was one of the few books where the author was not a person of color, and it was an author from a different, I think the author was white. But there was some critique about how the author was not part of the ethnic group, but then they also do not mention if there's any stereotyping expressed. They just mentioned that they did not like that the author was not part of the ethnic group.
Okay, so it becomes that review is almost like a commentary on lived experience then. Like the person didn't have the lived experience, but they're writing about a culture that's not their own, I suppose?
Yeah, and it was critique, but it didn't exactly touch too much upon whether there was issues with authenticity. I would say it was also pretty surprising that there was so much praise towards authenticity, or and I don't think stereotypes were mentioned much at all. So I would say that that was also a very interesting discovery.
All right, I'm going to change the question slightly for Haley. For Lily, I'm going to change the question slightly. I'm going to keep it in the same ballpark. Were you familiar with the source material of Peppa Pig, Bluey, and Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood before going into your analysis of the reviews that parents were providing? And was there anything that was surprising or agreed with preconceived notions that you had?
Yeah. So prior to this research, I hadn't watched Bluey.
Never? You'd never watched Bluey?
I'd never watched Bluey. Okay. I heard things about it, but I never watched it. But I mean, even growing up, I watched Peppa Pig. So I think through my research, I found that a lot of parents criticized it. It was the most negatively rated show in my research from the reviews.
Hear that, parents?
I know. I was surprised because I was like, wow, I remember watching this as a kid, some sentimental value, I guess. But it surprised me because it pointed out things that I never noticed watching it. And it was a lot of things were talking about body shaming, Peppa body shaming her father and, talking back to her parents, kind of encouraging that in kids. And it was something I never thought of from my perspective.
Did you ever find yourself as a child talking back to your parents or body shaming them after watching Peppa Pig?
I didn't. But I was conducting this research one time and my mom was watching my niece, and I went home and my niece was watching Peppa Pig, and my mom turned off the TV and she started having a temper tantrum, and I was like, I don't know if this is correlated, but...
Yeah, correlation and causation. It would be interesting to see if that was Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood, would the same experience have happened?
I know. I guess I have to conduct an experiment.
Yeah, we need a randomized control trial and we got to push that a little bit more.
Yeah, when you told me about that, I was actually really surprised because I remember watching Peppa Pig when I was younger as well. And I don't think I noticed anything related to talking back to parents or body shaming. And then now, I think I see on social media that sometimes it's mentioned, but I just never thought about it. And I don't think it ever came up in my mind.
I haven't watched a Peppa Pig episode in a really long time, so I'm going to take your word for it that there's this phenomenon of people realizing that Peppa's maybe a little bit too spicy, pun intended, with her talking back to her parents. And that is something that I guess was revealed in the reviews. So you're saying Peppa Pig was the most negatively perceived.
Yeah.
What was the most positively received, if it's easy to make a distinction?
I think it was really distinct. Bluey overall had so many positive...
Bluey wins.
I know, it won. I think it was surprising to my findings because Bluey was so positive. Daniel Tiger's was like kind of half and half, and Peppa was really negative. But a lot of parents said that it was like really educational, and they felt like their child was like more not only like articulate of their emotions, but like there was an episode on like teaching how to tie your shoes, and their kid truly tried to teach their shoes, like teach their shoes, tie their shoes.
It's okay. I want to bring this back to something you said earlier with the correlation causation piece.
Yeah.
And I mentioned this multiple times in this podcast, but a large amount of the work that students do in this program, whether it's through interest or just available resources, tends to be in the social sciences.
Yeah.
And it would be interesting to do some kind of randomized control trial where you're looking at psychological studies with kids where you're withholding shows from them, but due to institutional review board practices, I'm sure we'll never be able to get that off the ground in our school, and that's okay. But if you could merge your work with some sciences, like be they the biological, psychological, hey, you want to throw chemistry and physics in here? I don't care. How would you push this work if you had access to more resources that you don't have now?
I think there would be a couple different ways I would take it. So what Haley kind of said, I found like was like really connected with me, kind of doing content analysis on the media, kind of to see if these reviews like were like a parent's perception or if it was like actual, like, you know, like is Peppa Pig really fat shaming her dad or is it a parent's perception, you know?
I don't know.
Neither do we. And kind of the whole thing, I want to test like the correlational thing and see, you know, obviously like parents would kind of be like grasping at straws to see if this is this why my kid's acting out or to see if it's like the truth, you know?
Okay. So like a broad scale psychological, yeah. Almost a longitudinal study where over years you watch what Peppa Pig exposure does. Haley, same question to you. How would you push this given more resources or access to a completely different discipline?
I think it would be really cool to do like a neurological study on this and like being able to see maybe like parts of the brain that, because in the literature review, it talked a lot about how these ages like 3 to 4 is when you have racial awareness and like age 8 is when you really are able to like start acting on it or like showing it. And I know many studies have examined the themes or like if there is misrepresentation, but I don't think there has really been like a super science focused paper kind of focusing on the direct impact. And I think that would be very difficult with like IRB and everything, but yeah.
We don't have access to an fMRI machine here, but that is an interesting idea of moving from the social sciences to more the like biological, particularly neurological sciences, to see if someone, you know, if a child's reading this book, what areas of the brain are lit up. I think you talked about like this idea of like windows and mirrors, and I'm just thinking of mirror neurons right now. But yeah, that could definitely be a way to push it. That's an interesting idea. Do either of you have any plans to push this work any further as you go into higher education? Do you see this fitting anywhere in your later academic journey, or was this something that you did in this course and you're pretty good with it where it is right now?
Currently, I don't really have like a set plan in pushing the work.
I'm not trying to force you to. I'm just throwing it out there as a hypothetical.
I do think that there are definitely ways that the work can be pushed. And I think that in general, it was a valuable experience itself to be able to conduct this research and the skills that I have like learned, and also being able to like delve more into this topic could be something that I pursue in the future as well.
I agree. I don't think right now I have any plans of pushing it forward, but I think it left me with skills that I can apply like further in other studies. And also kind of, I just like having this knowledge and I found it really interesting. So
on that, Lily, what skills do you think you picked up along the way? Because I was just about to ask a question like this, but what skills do you think you picked up along the way, particularly in research, that you feel like have not just application now over the past year, but in the future as well?
Okay. So I think more in like the research based, I learned how to like take a step back and like kind of have a comprehensive like understanding of things. So I went into my research, I was just going to look at Bluey and I was just going to look at IMDb. And I was like, this is not kind of a comprehensive like understanding of public opinion. And that kind of taught me that I have to gather different, not only different perspectives, but like different shows can help promote a greater understanding. So that's why I added different platforms and then different shows kind of to like have comparison. So it taught me like stronger research skills, I guess.
Haley, same question. What skills do you picked up over the course of this year that you feel like you wouldn't have otherwise had access to in other courses?
I think research has really challenged me in a new way in terms of, I think that when it comes to conducting your own research, there can be a lot of uncertainty, especially because my method and Lily's method, we both kind of like came up with it, not like super derived from our disciplines, because our disciplines, like for example, my discipline would focus more on analyzing the books themselves rather than the online reviews, although I have seen like some studies focused on the reviews, but not particularly in terms of children's books. And having to figure out like how I would go about this and navigating things that I wasn't sure about. And sometimes that would leave me with like a roadblock where I'd feel a bit like stuck in terms of, I don't know what to do next. And I would have to find a way to push through that, because I don't think there's like, I kind of had to learn to accept that I don't really think there's a time where you would ever be like fully certain of like 100% this is like the best method, this is what I need to do, or whatever. Like, I think that there's always like limitations or like different things that you can look into, and I guess like accepting that and being able to navigate that was really valuable.
Accepting uncertainty is probably, and that's a huge portion of life, is just, you never know if it's 100% the right decision. You make the decision based on the most readily available sources, most readily available information that you have, and you try to make sure it's credible, but they're, you know, things are constantly changing. On that note, Lily, what do you think is the most significant change from 2 years ago when you started the AP Capstone program for you? It could be academically, it could be like socially, you know, emotionally. Where do you think that change occurred in the last 2 years?
So I think it was definitely, I think, all, like overall, like writing, presenting as a student, but especially in being able to like articulate my ideas better, you know, the time limits were stressful, but they also taught me that you have to articulate the main points of your findings and kind of start to finish in like a succinct way. And that was really like, I think, helpful for me, especially in like other classes, like as a law student, there's a huge like push for you to know how to do that. And I think research really, especially actually SEM too, like really helped me do that.
All right. Same for you, Haley.
Sorry, could you repeat the question?
It was over the last 2 years, where do you feel like the most significant change has happened for you, or the most growth in doing, you know, 2 years of an independent research program?
Seminar and research, I feel like, left me with different like skills or value.
That's fine too, yeah.
I would say with seminar, I was able to explore a lot of different topics. I was able to navigate more of communicating with a group and being able to work on writing skills and presenting skills. And then research was a lot more to do with, I think, personal time management, flexibility, trying to try new things, really, because research is so like different from the usual type of academic settings that we have.
That's a good point. I think we're running out of time here, but I think to end this, do you have any advice for anyone who's considering doing, it doesn't have to be in the AP Capstone program, but any student out there who's considering doing independent research in high school, do you have any words of wisdom for them? And we'll end with that.
You can go first.
All right, so Haley first.
Okay, so I feel like a lot of people will always say like time management, procrastination, and at some point, like there's so much you can say about that topic, but then it all like goes in one ear and then come out. I would say in terms of that, like I think people find sending emails to professors pretty threatening.
Expert. We ask students to get expert advisors in this course, but yeah, elaborate on that.
I think like people usually send like one email and then afterwards like they don't get a response and they're like, oh, never mind. But I think like I started sending out like a lot more emails like later in my year, and I did get responses, and it kind of like left me like, oh, I felt like I should have started sending more of these out like earlier in the year so that I could have more feedback, because I know that one of the professors I reached out to like could help, but then and like sent like sources that was like, oh, here are some like valuable sources that are highly used in this discipline, but then she also focused on a different aspect, and because I already decided on a certain aspect, I wasn't able to work with her as much. So I think, and also because like I think I sent out like I don't remember, but I had like a pretty high rate of like response, and then one of the professors like responded, and sometimes they're just really sweet and say like that they're really excited for children or like for like high schoolers to be involved in this, and that's just like words of encouragement that is like nice to have from a professor or something like that. And even if like they don't help with your work, it's still valuable. So
okay, don't fear rejection. That's a big, it seems like a big thing. Don't fear
yeah.
rejection, and be open to just reaching out when you need help. Because even those words of encouragement, even though it's not directly, hey, I got this source for you, I can review your method, that's something to keep you going in a marathon of a course.
Yeah, exactly.
Great. All right, Lily, your thoughts.
I think for a couple things. So first, I think it's also kind of, Haley was talking about talking to expert advisors. I think it's also beneficial to talk to like other people, and kind of, I think Mr. Olivo had a really big push for us like to
that's me
to articulate our ideas to other people and kind of see how I think it helps us, first of all, understand like the main components of our research better and kind of see areas where we can improve, having other outside perspectives poke holes. And I think it also is important for you to have like kind of confidence in your abilities, and you're the one that knows your research the best, kind of. This is a gap in the field. You're kind of on like new ground. So not only do you have to read a lot of background research to understand what you're doing, but kind of also take risks and like be okay with like failing, but like also know that you like can fix it and be a better researcher for it.
So don't be afraid of rejection, collaborate with others, and don't be afraid of failure. I think that works not just in research but in probably any capacity. Yeah. So those are very good words of advice. All right, thank you both of you for your time. Do you have any last things you want to say? Or
I feel like I just wanted to talk about like the what Lily was mentioning with like talking to other people.
Sure.
Because
yeah.
the AP research environment, you're like in a classroom with a bunch of other people who are also doing research, and even if it's not like exactly the same as you, you can still gain so much from that. Like I remember like talking to Lily about my method as well a lot, because we both did have like this similar overlap. But even with like other people, like they can like bring up ideas that you have never even thought of before, and they can also like review your paper and stuff. And I know that like probably a lot of the current AP research students, like next year, they'd be down to like look at the following year's research as well, because it's just like interesting to read as a whole. And thank you, Mr. Olivo.
Man, no problem. It's my pleasure. Yeah. All right, Lily, any things you want to say before we go?
I don't know. I think Haley covered it. She did a good job.
Yeah. All right, awesome. So we'll leave it at that. All right, thank you for participating in episode 2, and have a lovely rest of your day.
Thank you.